Welcome into the Draft Report Podcast. I'm Jack Borowski, joined here alongside my co-host Sam Teeth. On this episode, we give out our draft grades for the NFC South 2020 classes, go over this year's edge group, and discuss the top prospects that we've watched recently. So we'll start with reviewing the 2020 class for the NFC South. And this is a division that we see now, you could argue, is the weakest in football and kind of has been for a few years now, you know, since the Saints kind of had a stronghold on the division when we seemed to be winning it every year, and Falcons with Matt Ryan were good. You know, the last few years, it's kind of been a little bit of a struggle. But we're going to start with the Falcons. And I remember on draft night being totally surprised they went in this direction when they went with AJ Terrell in the first round. Looks really smart now. So they went AJ Terrell in the first round, then Marlon Davidson round two, Matt Hennessy round three, Michael Walker round four, Jalen Hawkins as well in round four, and Sterling Hoffreiter, the punter, in round seven. So your overall grades and takeaways from that draft class?
I mean, it's a one-player draft class, basically. No one besides AJ Terrell is still on this team. And Terrell obviously was an all-pro caliber player a couple of years ago. He's been good, but not nearly as good in recent years. I think between a C-plus and a B-minus for me, it really comes down to what you get from Terrell. If Terrell is just a top 15 corner, it's probably more of a C-plus. If he ends up being like a top 10 corner year to year for the rest of his career, for the rest of like his prime, then I think you're talking about more of like a B-minus or a B. But right now, I will probably lean C-plus, considering the fact they had four picks in the top 120, and only one of them still on the roster. And it was your first round pick, which you're supposed to hit on.
Yeah, I was a little bit more difficult on the draft class because it was so one person dominant, but it was AJ Terrell. So I went with a C. Because like Marlon Davidson, it's not like they just didn't get anything out of Marlon Davidson. He was like really bad for them. Matt Hennessy, they did, I think, get a year or two out of him as a starter before drafting Matthew Bergeron and Drew Dalman to kind of be those replacements for him. Yeah, and Michael Walker was really good as a rookie. He had like a super high PFF grade and kind of fizzled out after that. And he struggled a lot on the Steelers last year. Yeah, so I was actually leading C minus and C, and I went with C because of AJ Terrell. And it wasn't as good of a year as he had previously, 2022, 2023, but yeah, or 2021, 2022. But I thought that overall, man, they got nothing besides him. So I went with the C. We've actually seen that more often than I would have expected. Just like one guy who's really good and then everyone else just flamed out. That's why it's like, seems like if I could get two guys who can start, it's a home run. Next up, this one was an interesting draft, the New Orleans Saints, because I remember they'd come off of a few, like they had a heater run where they were not missing on draft picks. And then this year they said, screw it, we're only going to take four players. So they go Cesar Ruiz in the first round, Zach Bond and Adam Trautman in the third round, and then Tommy Stevens, who was kind of going to be their next Taysom Hill, in the seventh round. How did you end up grading this group of four players?
Yeah, I mean, this is also not a great draft class. Kind of, again, a one-player grouping. I know they kept Zach Bond for all 4 years, but that was a pretty horrendous pick. I think he didn't really play a ton for them. He never got close to really fitting in the role they were talking about him maybe filling on draft night. Trautman was just the guy who I think was only there for 3 years. It really comes down to how much you value Cesar Ruiz. And he's kind of been up and down a bit. I mean, there's been injuries to some extent. He's a good player, but he's not the same caliber of players AJ Terrell, and AJ Terrell is on. You know, Ruiz is not that kind of guy. So I think this is, I mean, they had three top 105 picks. I would just say a classic C. You know, I don't think there's anything that really elevates this class above that level. And I know they didn't have as many picks as the Falcons, which is why I'm not lower on them, but it's a C or C plus at best.
Yeah, again, this one I went a little bit lower than you on too. I went D plus because I just feel like Cesar Ruiz, when you're going to draft an interior offensive lineman in the first round, it's not like a super high value position. We see guys hit on day two and even day three versus a tackle, right? If Cesar Ruiz was his equivalent of a tackle, I'd definitely go, you know, C plus. I just felt like to get a guy, he's a starter, and they gave him 4 for 44. Like they were fine with doing that. Did I think it was a little premature and a little bit too much? Yes. He's fine. You're right. Like, you got a starter in the first round. And then Zach Baugh did do a tiny bit last year. And Troutman, you got some things out of. I guess you could say, you know, he wasn't a complete flame out. But yeah, like, I don't think that they had. Yeah, AJ Terrell, I just think, right? Like, if you're going to have one player draft, have it be AJ Terrell, Jalen Johnson, even though that wasn't the case. But just guys who are really good players, where Cesar Ruiz is for an I went harder than you did just because I was like interior offensive line versus a cornerback one. It's just like, you know, how do you value that? So that's why I went with the Saints. But I just remember on draft night, it was like, oh, like Zach Bond in the third round, like this is going to work because the Saints drafted him and they haven't really missed. And then, you know, Cesar Ruiz, and then they traded back in for Troutman. It was like, they have no more picks left. And it was like, well, they're going to get three guys who can start for them. And that wasn't the case. They got one guy who's a starter, and that is about it. The Carolina Panthers next up. This was an interesting draft because they went all defense, and I don't know how much they improved their defense, you know, 5 years later outside of one player. But no, how did you end up grading this group?
Yeah, it's again, a pretty much not as one player-y as some of the other draft classes we talked about, but it's Derrick Brown, the first round, pick 7 overall. He's obviously the star of this draft class, the guy who has Pro Bowl caliber potential. If we're talking about the top 10 interior defensive players in the NFL, he's certainly one of them, if not on the top 7 or 8 of that grouping. Yetur Gross-Matos in the second round, he was there all 4 years of his contract, and now he's not there anymore. Jeremy Chinn, same thing, there all 4 years and then gone. And then he dropped to the fourth round, Troy Pride Jr., 5th round, Kenny Robinson Jr., 6th round, Brevion Roy, 7th round, Stanley Thomas, Oliver. Those players didn't really make an impact during the time in the NFL. So Derrick Brown, Yetur Gross-Matos, and Jeremy Chinn. You get 4 years from all those guys so far. I'm giving it probably a B minus, I would say. I mean, you got starting experience from 3 different guys. So it's probably actually, I'm going to give it more of a B. I'm going to say B for this draft. You got 4 years of starting experience from 3 separate players. Jeremy Chinn was kind of up and down with injuries a bit towards the end, and they played him in a really bit of an odd role. But during the opening parts of his career, the first 2 seasons, he was a very impactful player. Gross-Matos was solid. You know, he's serviceable, I guess. Probably played a little bit more than you would like, but he was a serviceable player. And Derrick Brown has evolved after a tough start to his career into a true star in the NFL.
Yeah, I went B+. Yeah, when you look at this group, you read off some of those names. Yeah, like I think they were hoping more for Troy Pride, Kenny Robinson, who really, yo, just did not do anything for them. And Brevion Roy, like, it was probably a little bit of just, you know, them not having D-line depth and Matt Rhule just drafting him from Baylor and saying, we're just going to play this guy even though he's not very good. But he wasn't a complete flame out on day 3. Yeah, I said to myself, they got rookie year Jeremy Chinn, where he was pretty close. Like, you could have made somewhat of an argument for him for defensive rookie of the year. Like, he was in that conversation. So they got one really good year out of him as a rookie. Yeah, it's been hit or miss since injuries. You know, there's a reason he's on a 1-year short-term deal in Washington. And then Gross-Matos, I think you were hoping for more. He's at, you know, a third rusher, which, for the 38th pick in the draft, you want a little more. But then, right, Derrick Brown goes back to AJ Terrell, some of these other blue chip players. Like, you get a premier defensive tackle who's one of the top 3 run defenders in the entire NFL. Like, that's a superstar. They pay him like one. He's, you know, going to be a cornerstone piece for them. You know, that's what you want to do. Premier position, superstar, and then 2 other guys who gave you something, which is why, right, if it was just Derrick Brown, I'd probably go B-, where like AJ Terrell's like CC+, and then the other guys not being Marlon Davidson and Matt Hennessy, kind of, you know, up it a little bit. So yeah, that was the Carolina Panthers. Another draft that is one person heavy. Last draft we're going to get to, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This was the year that they added Tom Brady, ended up winning the Super Bowl. They went Tristan Wirfs in the first round, Antoine Winfield Jr. in the second, Keyshawn Vaughn in the third, Tyler Johnson in the fifth, Khalil Davis in the sixth, and Chappelle Russell and Raymond Kalis in the seventh. Where did this team finish for you?
So this is a two-person class as opposed to one-person class, and you got arguably the best players at both their positions in the NFL. Tristan Wirfs, maybe not there yet, but he's certainly on the short list to be the best left tackle in the league. And if he had played right tackle, he would have been arguably the best right tackle in the NFL. It's him, Penei Sewell, and Trent Williams essentially are the guys, and Lane Johnson as well. Those are the four basically up there for the best tackles in the NFL right now. And then Antoine Winfield Jr., I don't know that anyone's arguing against him being the best safety in the NFL. Maybe if you say Kyle Hamilton is more of a safety and less of a true nickel, then he's in that conversation. But two, at worst, top four players at their positions, this has to be an A to me. The rest of the draft class, you've got absolutely nothing long-term, but just two roster cornerstones who've got these market-resetting contract extensions. Yeah, this has to be an A. I really thought Tyler Johnson could be something for them. I'll be honest, like as a depth piece, as like a wide receiver three potentially, I like Tyler Johnson coming out as a fifth-round pick, but just didn't work out for him. But yeah, this is an A, easily, if not an A+.
What's funny is they have Keyshawn Vaughn listed at Illinois. I don't know if that's where he started at college-wise, but he was at Vandy to finish his career. I just thought that was interesting. But yeah, you got to go A or A+ here. Like I didn't remember. I was like, oh, wow. Like this was, everyone remembers the Tristan Wirfs pick because it went, he was a fourth tackle. And like, I'm like, you don't want to be critical of it because he just like fell into their lap. You have to be critical. Like we've knocked the Jets and the Browns because they passed on the best tackle from the draft and like as good of a young player as you can have. Like nobody passed on Sewell. The Lions had took the first tackle and they took Sewell, right? Like that's just kind of how it was. I mean, you could Andrew Thomas, that's totally fine. But then the other two guys, you have to knock them. But then I can't be like, how did you know, like taking Tristan Wirfs over? They just fell into their lap. Sometimes you get lucky. And then Winfield Jr. Yeah, to get two guys you could argue are the best players at their position is insane for a draft. I was like, because you gave it an A, I'm just going to give it an A+ because I originally wrote down A. But it's like I was just like, you know, we haven't given out too many A+s here. And NFL teams swear like we want two starters and you get the two best players you could argue at their positions and Tristan Wirfs it plays left tackle and Winfield Jr. is the highest paid defensive back in the entire NFL. But yeah, if they got like anything out of anyone else, we'd be talking about this as the best draft class out of any team in the league, right? Like it's on that Burrow T. Higgins level. The only difference with any of these teams is that you know they did it wasn't a quarterback. They weren't one of the five teams that hit on their quarterback. So that's the only difference. But yeah, UNA. So I'll go A+. But yeah, holy cow! You want to hit on two draft picks, have them be the two best players at their respective positions in the NFL. So that was nuts. Any final takeaways from these four teams?
Not really from these four. I think it just goes to show, though, that the value of hitting on one really good player can kind of erase a lot of mistakes later on in the draft class. Think about some of these GMs who maybe are still in positions, even though they've had these bad drafts. You have to hit on at least someone, and you can kind of keep it going. But I do think that it shows that even these guys who are paid full-time and 24/7 scouting the draft to go into this whole process can be just as mistake-prone as anyone else when it comes to this kind of stuff.
It is crazy in how I talk about this, and I think we've gotten to a point, you know, four teams left of the NFC West. You have to hit on your first round pick. Like, that's the most important thing. If you hit on your first round pick in every draft, which is difficult to do, especially, and this is why, like, I think, and this is how the NFL is supposed to work and how the draft works, is like the first round is always like there's like nine guys, well, let's just say, who are like, they could be superstar. Once you get to pick 28, like they're all second round talents at that point for the most part. So it makes it so much more difficult when we knock all these teams picking like 27, like, oh, they didn't hit on a first rounder. And it's like, it's so much more difficult. But if you're a top half of the first round, like you better hit on Derek Brown. You better hit on AJ Terrell. You better hit on Tristan Wirfs, or else you're the Arizona Cardinals where you take Zaven Collins, Isaiah Simmons. And it could just really crush your franchise. You know, the 49ers sustained success. They've hit on some day three guys, but like when you hit on Nick Bosa the way you do, and you get that level of value. Armstead and Buckner, what they got out of them in the first round. Like, if you can hit on guys to that level, it turns your team into something where you have so much sustained success. Mahomes, right? Like, there's certain, you know, top half of the first round picks you better hit on. And so
you're not Kadarius Collins, but he just got a contract extension the other day.
Yeah, two for 14 with 11 guaranteed. Congrats to Zaven Collins, who is a solid run defender, as a tweener 3-4 outside backer, who actually, you know, like, good for him. Like, he found a role in Arizona, and he could be like a their version kind of Malik Harrison in Baltimore, where he's a good run defender and kind of does everything well enough to be a third edge rusher who is going to have to be the number one edge rusher in Arizona. So
it's funny. Well, yeah, BJ Ojulari tore his ACL here. I was so disappointed seeing that, man. I'm such a big BJ Ojulari guy. It just, that stinks. But now, he, Zaven Collins is kind of what we mentioned Zach Bond earlier in this talk, but like, that's kind of like how draft night they were talking about Zach Bond was going to be this kind of hybrid edge player. And that didn't work out. And Collins has been okay, but I don't think either of us have been blown away by his overall performance.
No, I'm just shocked that, like, he didn't completely flame, like that he has a role while Isaiah Simmons doesn't, right? Like, he found something he could do in the league. But this is a Steve Keim episode that we'll do later on. But yes, that was, but it just showed, like, when you hit on top half of the first round picks, like, it really changes the makeup of your franchise and kind of allows you to do so much more. So that was the NFC South, which, you know, Buccaneers clearly won that and may have, you know, one of the best drafts, top three in the NFL for that year. So kudos to them and help them win a Super Bowl. So, you know, never hurts with that. So now on to the prospects watch. And then next after that, we'll do the edge rusher preview because we've gone through everyone. Only at one edge rusher, we'll finish with him. So first off, we're going to be doing Travis Hunter as a wide receiver and a cornerback. The first time done two position evals on a player. And then Deion Walker, the defensive tackle at Kentucky. Tet McMillan, we're shortening his name, his nickname, the wide receiver from Arizona. And then Trey Moore, the defensive end from Texas. My first question before we even get into the Travis Hunter report, how many, you know, cornerback, like, wide receivers, you know, because this has never happened, right? This is, I mean, like, I'm sure it has, but, like, since we've begun scouting in recent memory, there hasn't been a guy who's played both sides of the ball this way and can contribute at such a high level. I'm just curious, like, could Jalen Ramsey have done this? Like, I'm just like, there's got to have been, like, I don't know if maybe Surtain, like, how he would have looked, but there's, like, is he just so unique as a talent that he's the only one who could do this? Or are there other guys out there that you think could have the same kind of success?
I mean, Jabril Peppers playing a little bit of safety, a little bit of offense. Like, he was probably the closest thing to a guy who did a little bit of both in recent memory. You go back further, you get like Charles Woodson, Champion, those types of players. But that's been a while since then. At corner, though, it's really hard to say. You know, I'm trying to think back. You just mentioned the top guys in the league. And I do assume that someone like Jalen Ramsey would have been able to do it because he's just such a superb athlete. Because he has had a Hall of Fame career at corner, I assume that he would have been all right doing it. But, I mean, I even look at someone like Ahmad Gardner. Would he just be like this big contested catch kind of guy to some extent? Like, I think that Ahmad Gardner would just be this kind of guy. Maybe this is a bit of a weird one because he can't catch the ball. But, like, Reek Woolen was originally a receiver at UTSA, I believe, and then had to transition because he wasn't catching the football well, and so they moved him to the corner. So like, he could hypothetically do something, I believe, because he at least went into college as a receiver, but, you know, they moved him from positions for a reason. I think you just go and look at, like, the superb freakish athletes with the long wingspans, the fast 40 times, and try to draw from that group. But I don't think we've ever seen a guy like Hunter who has legit all conference all American level upside at both positions.
Yeah. No, I just was curious because, like, nobody else tries it, but, like, could, like, Will Johnson just do this, or would it not work? So just was curious there. But yeah, your report on Travis Hunter, take me through it.
So I'm going to start off with him at receiver because I think that he's got fewer flaws as a receiver than a corner right now. I've seen a lot of people say they like him more as a corner. I'll be honest with you, I don't see that as much. You know, I lean a lot more towards wide receiver pretty heavily. I do understand it'll be an interesting conversation to have, but I do understand from like a money making perspective, he'd be better off being a receiver. They get paid more. But from a rarity perspective, an NFL team I think is more likely to draft him as a corner than a receiver, just because there are so few elite corners in the NFL. And Hunter has the upside to become one of those players. But as a receiver, he's a top 10 pick for me, a top 10 caliber player. I project him primarily playing in the slot at the next level, but he does have outside versatility. Overall, Hunter needs to get stronger to absorb more punishment, but his loose and twitchy athleticism gives him the most potential of any route runner in the 2025 class. He has the speed to stack defenders out of press coverage and create big plays through the catch, and his profile is extremely well-rounded as a receiver. And I do think his receiver ceiling exceeds that of what he can do as a corner. So some of the positives for him, he's played outside, he's played inside, so both out wide and in the slot. He's got really good conditioning to play basically over 100 snaps a week consistently. arm length should be good, should check the boxes for him. He's a very loose and fluid athlete, a really smooth mover as well. So all these buzzwords, the loose, fluid, smooth, twitchy, hits all that stuff. So just check all those different boxes out. A superb athlete. We've mentioned all these athletes who can be in that conversation being the best athlete overall in the class we've talked about. Abdul Carter being one of them. I think Travis Hunter is in that conversation as well, just because of how he moves. So that twitch really helps out in his release to avoid press coverage. And then see him just explode off the line and then get through those cuts with such great sink in his hips and explosiveness that he's able to just outspeed guys essentially and be able to accelerate faster than most players can match. He's a very difficult player to mirror because he's so loose. Off-man defenders will have trouble, you know, keeping up with him to some extent and mirroring him. Press DBs, when they try to punch him, sometimes will miss. And he is a bit of a smaller good guy in terms of, like, not height, but weight. So press coverage can disrupt him. The difficult issue for that is that it's so hard for defenders to actually get their hands on him that he performs that well. Good straight line speed and acceleration to stretch defenses vertically. And also a really good acceleration in short spaces. So he can create separation in limited areas. He can also create after the catch with a lot of different moves, a lot of different jukes. He's a very natural separator who mixes tempo and throws and hesitation moves. Really good shoulder and head fakes. He's able to really lower his body towards the ground when he's doing these fakes. And then explode horizontally when he wants to. Again, super smooth through his route fakes, really sharp 90-degree cuts to help him separate. And he's just lethal at the top of his stem in terms of the route fakes he throws. So really fantastic route runner in that sense. Does have to kind of fill out his route tree a little bit. But overall, he has the athletic tools that basically run every route in the book. And then just good at looking holes versus zone defense. Some hand fighting as a receiver, but he plays an aggressive role as a receiver. I'm surprised he didn't get some more OPI calls, honestly, because he's willing to like outright shove and push defenders around. So he can be really physical as a receiver, and he's a natural hands catcher with good ball tracking, who will finish contested catches, finish through contact, and work back to underthrown passes, and there were quite a few of them from Shamdur Sanders this past year. And then after the catch, he's got the speed and the elusiveness to really hit the open field and just go by people. Really sudden jukes and jump cuts. And he does a good job. What he does often is he catches the ball and he'll actually just spin backwards, essentially spin back around the trailing DB and into open space. Something that he does, though, not a lot of special teams experience. And again, that height is solid for him, but the weight's not great. The play strength is not fantastic right now. His outside releases will get pushed into the sideline. He does occasionally sell for being covered. There are times where he does take plays off a bit. And part of that's on Colorado for running these half field reads where he's not involved in the play. And also he's running, 120 snaps a week. You know, I think he's earned a little bit. He can take a few plays off here and there if he has to. But that play strength is really a concern for me as far as getting through press coverage. And then after the catch, he doesn't really have the play strength to play through tackles. And while he is a feisty competitive blocker, he doesn't have the strength and the form to sustain blocks for very long.
So, with Travis Hunter, my first question is, so just say he could have declared last year, is he ahead of Rome Odunze for you?
Oh, wow, that's tough. I felt like Rome was a higher floor player, but Hunter has a higher ceiling, in my opinion, if that makes sense. I think, like, Rome, you know what he's going to do well. Hunter, I don't know that he's got the consistency down yet, but and probably that's because he's not playing wide receiver full-time. He's playing it split. Now, if he's playing wide receiver full-time, I'd feel pretty confident I would have Hunter ahead of Rome. It's just hard to predict because he's not playing receiver full-time right now. But I do think that I would lean towards the ceiling and have Hunter ahead of Rome Odunze.
And you bring up a good point. We got to get to his DB evaluation, but you already said you have him as a higher wide receiver. I think the conversation is going to come down to, does Travis Hunter want to make the most money, or is he, you know, want to follow in Deion Sanders' footsteps and be this superstar cornerback? Because he could be a superstar at both, but is he, you know, want to be Deion? And what Deion did as a cornerback is a lot different than, you know, Travis just being a great receiver. You know, I don't know if he feels like I could be the best corner of all time, or, you know, I see Justin Jefferson making 35, and we just brought up Antoine Winfield's the highest paid defensive back at what, 21 a year? Yeah, like Sauce and Surtain will move that number close to the 25 range, but you know, like we're talking about Brandon Ayuk, CD Lamb, AJ Brown, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, like guys are gonna get paid. Think about, what are we going to say? 21 draft, Jamar Chase is going to get, you know, a tremendous amount of money. Amon-Ra St. Brown's a slot only making 30 a year, right? Like, this is a position group that you can just get paid top level cornerback money and be a number two guy. Like, Michael Pittman's making more money than any defensive back. And he's a good player. I'm not trying to pick on Michael Pittman here, but, right? Like, it's just such a difference money wise. You know, but, you're going to find very few rare cornerbacks, and he may feel like he could be that guy. So now your DB evaluation and yeah, other thoughts there.
Yeah, it's just the situation where, like you mentioned, do you want to make the most amount of money possible? And he's going to get all kinds of endorsement deals. This guy does streaming and stuff in his free time, so he's going to get a ton of money. He's a very personal dude, but that's such a massive gap. I mean, it's a $10 million gap, essentially, between the highest paid like corners or so and the highest paid receivers. And even if you're, you know, like what's T. Higgins going to get when he hits free agency next year? He's probably going to get like 25, 26 or so. Like, it's going to be top corners.
I think he's going to get even more, because I just think, and it's interesting with the market, how like the receiver market, not necessarily has exploded, it's always been pretty high, but like it's so much harder to find a true number one cornerback. Like there are three wide receivers like last year's draft is like, oh, we have Marvin generational. Wait, is Malik Nabers generational? Is Rome Odunze better than all of them? It's like, and then we got a guy who ran a 4.21 and Xavier Worthy. And it's like, and there's so many other players. It's like, we had 15 receivers who could play. It's like, you can't find a corner, right? Like, it's like Terry and Arnold, Quinyon. It's just, there's so many fewer guys. The first corner drafted was 22. It's so much harder to find one. So it's interesting how much, you know, wide receiver, when it's kind of become running back, that there are so many of them who are good, it's a very easy position to be good at. Yet that market keeps going up and up and up.
And it will be interesting to see in this draft class in particular if it influences what role he wants to kind of project himself as, because I'm thinking about even going to the scouting combine, you have to run with one group. You have to pick a group to work out with in the process. So we'll kind of know what he's leaning towards then. Assuming he goes, but
he's
not going to actually do anything at the combine. He's not even going to show up.
I would be, you know, because we talk about it every year, and I know this is getting off on like a little bit of a side note, but you know, we've gotten progressively to the point where, like, last year Caleb Williams was only, I think he only shared medicals with certain teams. Marvin Harrison Jr. came, measured, and left. There's no way Shedeur Sanders or Travis Hunter are showing up to the combine. There's Deion is going to, I wouldn't be shocked if Deion makes, you know, and no team has two first round pick, but if he's like, yeah, they're only going to this spot or something, we're going to hear like 5 years from now, it's either going to be a former scout who worked for a team or Shedeur or Travis be like, yeah, we went to this team and we told them, yeah, you're not allowed to draft us, or yeah, don't even think about coming up to trade for us. There's going to be stories, but yes, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, like, there's no way we see Travis Hunter. I don't even think, like, the two of them are going to do anything throughout the free draft process.
It'll be, I can't wait for the ESPN documentary on this Colorado team in 15 years or whatever, but I do think it'll be interesting in this class particular because we do have some wide receiver talent. We'll talk about Tech Milling here in a minute, but I think the wide receiver class is going to be a bit of a controversial one. It's not nearly as strong as it was last year. You look at the cornerback class, and there seem to, it's very top-heavy. It's not super deep, in my opinion, but it's very top-heavy. And I do wonder if that would push Hunter down the board a bit at corner versus wide receiver, or he might even be wide receiver one for some teams. So that's where I view it. And on top of being able to make more money as a receiver, I think that might be the ultimate path for him.
Your thoughts on him now at cornerback? Because this is a position we all thought he was going to play, and he was the number one recruit at.
Yeah, so he's very good at corner. And I think he's got a lot of room to improve to really earn a true first-round grade, but he's not really a true first-round player for me right now. I've got him like late first, early second at corner. It's a very hard position to play. We should start off by saying that. So it's not meant to be a knock on Hunter, per se. And I have like 11 or 12 guys even in this draft range so far. I'm not very high on a lot of dudes in this draft. But with Hunter, the issue he has is that he's got elite flashes of reading and jumping route combinations and zone coverage that set him apart from just everyone else in his cornerback class. He's so smart and so instinctive and good at reading the quarterback out of zone. It's phenomenal. But he has way more issues in man coverage downfield than anyone, any of the other top cornerbacks in this class. It's just, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like a discipline thing or if it's attention to detail. It might all be easily correctable. But he has so many times where he allows separation downfield. And he has the athletic traits to not allow that to happen. He's got all the potential to not allow it to happen. But there are routes where he just gets beat in man coverage. And it happens way too often for my liking. Because this is a player who has the physical traits. You would think he would excel in man coverage. And he does at times. There are plenty of positive reps where he's in press coverage or soft shoe press. And he does a great job mirroring and matching the receiver. But there's just way too many plays where he just gets beat downfield. So I think right now he projects primarily as an outside corner operating in cover two or cover one. I saw that they might have him listed in the nickel role right now for them on defense, which is kind of an interesting twist. I don't know if it's just trying to maximize their lineup as much as possible, but we'll see where he actually plays. He probably will just play all over for them this year. Some of the positives for him, again, good height for a corner. Arm length should be good. All that loose, twitchy fluidity, that all translates to this position as well. He's good at driving outside releases towards the sideline, and he doesn't mind hand fighting whatsoever. I did think he was more aggressive as a receiver than a corner, which I found really odd, because he was willing to take guys to the ground as a receiver, and I just didn't see that as often as a corner. And it might be because I watched games where he's playing Elric Eilmanner and Tet McMillan, who are just much taller than him, so it might just be the fact that it was just a strength difference, but I did feel like he was more aggressive as a receiver than the corner almost. But he's really good at locking into phase quickly on the receiver's hip. He has the ability to match the pacing and hesitation moves of receivers. He's got good recovery speed, though he doesn't always maximize it. And again, he has the speed to carry receivers vertically, but again, doesn't maximize that consistently. You watch him on the nine routes or the deep routes, he's facing Elric Eilmanner, and Elric's just not getting free from him at all. He doesn't have the ability to separate vertically against Travis Hunter. Hunter's really quick to redirect and stay attached to slant routes as well. Speed to close, get off the gaps, and really get back in phase and get attached on crossing routes as well, which sometimes you see a lot of corners just kind of trail behind and fall away on crossers, not really Hunter. He's quick to crowd the receiver and smother throwing lanes on comeback and curl routes as well. He can be sticky at the top of the stem. No real issues mirroring and matching Tet McMillan in their game against Arizona. And he's quick to drive on short yards in breaking routes as well. Does a really good job reading the quarterback's eyes, and he's willing. You see, he will jump off his man in zone coverage or in man coverage. He will leave his guy open when he feels like a receiver's getting ready to pull, or a quarterback getting ready to pull the trigger. He will leave his guy, and he will try to jump the next route below him, essentially, in the route tree. And it pays off sometimes. He had a really good play in Arizona, in the Arizona game, where I think he actually left. He left Jake McCallum, he left Tech McMillan to go jump the other guy's route, and I think he was in your interception a really good PBU, but he's did a really good job. The UCLA game, I think he had an interception doing this. He's just really good and really smart at reading the quarterback and knowing where the ball is going. He's got good overall awareness and zone coverage as well to know when guys are entering his zone from deeper areas of the field, so behind him, essentially, so he can drop back and get back into proper coverage. And he's a ball hawk, man. He's just really good at ball skills, good aggression at the catch point, really good soft hands as well. And then there are flashes of aggression versus the run sometimes. Like, he has moments where if they need him to be a strong run defender, if they need him to attack a screen, he will do it. He can be feisty that way. He can be feisty challenging blocks. Some of the negatives for him, though, the motor and run defense kind of comes and goes. That might be a bit of a, hey, I'm paying 120 snaps this game kind of thing. I'm just tired. I'm not going to run the extra 60 yards here and maybe catch a guy on the 5-yard line. So that kind of comes and goes. Play strength limits his ability to defeat stock blocks. I mean, he's not good at stacking and shedding blocks right now. I already mentioned the pursuit can be inconsistent at times, and he will dive and miss tackle attempts. I think that play strength overall causes some issues for him with finishing tackles too. Not a lot of special teams coverage or special teams experience and diversity. Hasn't spent a lot of time in the slot previously. Again, he might play a little bit more of that this year. He's got a very lean and slender build with limited true press coverage reps. So a lot of soft shoe stuff where he's not trying to jam the receiver at the line, but you know, limited true reps where he's jamming the guy and shutting him down right away. He takes these very wide horizontal strides at the line of scrimmage. And because he's taking such wide steps, it actually makes it harder for him to react and get back into phase very quickly on shifty releases. So he allows a little bit too much separation early. He's too quick to declare his hips and puts too much faith in his speed because he's stacked far more often than he should be. He is late to accelerate on vertical routes. He does appear to get lost as well on some vertical routes in man coverage because he'll turn his head. He'll have his head either looking at the quarterback, and then he won't have his eyes on the receiver. The receiver will just turn and burn, and he will end up being 5 yards behind the wide receiver vertically downfield because he's not paying attention to where the receiver is going. He can be late to locate the ball consistently, and that leads to him not being as effective at the catch point as he should be. He does get grabby as well, especially when he feels like he's getting beat vertically, which happened a couple of times. He can be slow to transition from his back pedal to forward drive to drive on slant routes and close those off. And while his anticipation is very good in certain times, I think it's still developing at other moments because he will bite for on eye manipulation. He will drift a lot and leave receivers open in his blind spots in zone coverage. And again, he's very inconsistent at the catch point right now versus larger receivers. So I think there's enough flaws there for me that he's not a true first round evaluation.
If he went to, he was originally supposed to go to Florida State. So if he went to Florida State and just picked a position, or let's say Alabama and just picked a position, wide receiver or cornerback, whichever one you want to choose, I wonder if he would be the just the best player in the draft. Like, he is, in my opinion, the most talented player. Obviously, he's a first-round pick as a wide receiver or a cornerback. He is the most talented. Right? I'm not saying anything crazy, but I think he would be. And that's why I'm kind of there with having him as the best player in the draft. And I know some people may not, but I just think his path has been, we have to remember, this is his first year of FBS football, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was at Jackson State beforehand playing against FCS teams. He was incredible making the jump up. He just had the most unique path, he and Shedeur Sanders, I think we've kind of ever seen. And that these guys were clearly FBS players from day one. Like, this wasn't Trey Lance, who Minnesota would only bring in as a tight end, so he has to go to North Dakota State as a quarterback and that whole deal. Like, these guys were, Shedeur, a decently high four-star recruit, and Travis was the number one player in the country who goes to play for an FCS team to follow Deion Sanders, and he's playing both ways. And last year, he's playing like 120 snaps a game, and we're expecting him to be elite at both positions. You're not getting enough practice reps at either spot. And for him to be what he is, I wonder if a team sits there, you're picking third, fourth overall. One, he's going to put fans in the seats no matter what you do with him. And two, like, is there untapped potential here because he hasn't played one spot? Or is this going to be like a circus where Deion's running the show and he's like, you're going to play him at both spots? And how it's just a mess with Colorado and everything. I don't know. But I just, you know, curious your thoughts where I'm like, I think he's just the best talent in the draft. And there's a lot that's going to come with that, though.
He's definitely the most versatile player in the draft. I think the issue is that you know he can be good at both spots, but you can't, you might not be able to play him both, really, because if you need him to play 50 snaps at corner a game, are you really going to ask him to go play 50 snaps a receiver in the NFL? Like, that's not going to play as much. You might be able to do that against UCLA and Ethan Garbers or whatever, but you're not going to be able to do that in the NFL as much. So I think it's really a little bit tough because he is a really good player. But I look at something like Mason Graham, who I know what you do. You do one thing, you do really well. You play one role and you're really good at it. It might just be easier to have that, which is probably really bad logic, but I think it might just be easier to have a player you know what role he's playing, you know where he translates, just to go with that guy, which is why I think an NFL team might determine before they pick Hunter what role he's going to play, essentially, and say, okay, we're going to play him and develop him at this one role, and if an opportunity opens up where he can play multiple spots, we'll do it, but for now, we're going to focus on one role for him in training camp going forward, and then maybe open it up later on, but it is such a weird thing, because we've never seen a player this good at two spots who could legitimately be a top five pick or so.
Right, you talk about, you know, teams are like, yo, he could, if he's not a good tackle, I know he's going to be a good guard. It's like, if he's not a great corner, it's like, I know he's going to be an elite receiver. It's just like one of those things where, like, yeah, I just wonder what I was trying to say. It's like, is there, like, Mason Graham, we know what he is. He's played defensive tackle his whole life, I'm assuming, and D tackle at Michigan, right? Like, he's played 2 years of defensive tackle at Michigan going against the best team. This guy has been all over the place doing all these different things. Yeah, I'm just curious. Like, yeah, like, what's going to be the deal here? Is there something where it's like, because he hasn't gotten the reps at cornerback in practice and he's playing so much receiver, like, is he way better at corner than we think he is? Or is it, in the same could be said about wide receiver. Like, is this the most unique top five pick where it's like he has so much untapped potential, even though he's really good at two different positions?
Yeah, well, I think you definitely see that at corner. Because again, I mentioned he has the physical traits to be this terrific player at corner and be a really good man coverage corner. But right now, it seems to be a more mental aspect to the game and some technical stuff as well, like handling releases and trying to mirror releases. But definitely underdeveloped for that role because he has potential to be a much better corner than he is right now, especially in man coverage. And that receiver, I kind of touched on his route tree being good, but not completely filled out right now. So I feel like there is a lot of development left on the table for him. And part of it's because he's just splitting reps between two different spots. And, you know, not to knock Jackson State or anything like that, but going to Jackson State and with what they have facility-wise, even though Deion poured money into it, it's still not going to match what you could get at a Florida State or an LSU or an NFL team. It just can't. You know, Deion Sanders is not going to cover up that big of a gap, just no matter what he brings in. So I think there's definitely development left on the table for Hunter. And he's definitely the most versatile player and one of the most intriguing players in this draft class. I think from a hype perspective, he will probably be the Caleb Williams of this draft class in terms of the name, brand, and the money generating that he'll have. It's just all the opportunities he will have to be this ultimate hype machine for an NFL team that takes him. I think he's going to be that kind of player for this draft.
No, I agree. He'll be a fun one to follow. It's also, we have Abdul Carter, Harold Perkins, like these unique guys where it's like, they're super talented five stars. What do you do with them? Or Abdul Carter wasn't, but yeah, the other two. So you get the point. So yeah, that was that. I know we had Deion Walker up next. I don't know if you don't have your notes up for McMillan yet or you do, but I was thinking just because we talked about because I'm so programmed to think of Travis Hunter as a corner, even though he's better at wide receiver. That I was like, oh, well, we'll do the receiver later on. But it's like they could be playing the same position and be two of the best. So if you have McMillan up, I'd love to hear your thoughts on him next.
Yeah. I got McMillan pulled up right now. So I gave him a late first, early second round grade. So similar range to Hunter at corner, but below Hunter by a good margin at receiver. One of the issues I had with McMillan is while he's got great height, he's not this incredible separator right now. And I think that I saw someone throw out like a Keon Coleman name thing in terms of like, oh, Keon Coleman wasn't this fantastic separator either. Well, I think Coleman separated more. I was hiring Coleman than a lot of people at the end of the process. I think we remember this, but Coleman may separate a little bit more naturally. And Coleman was also a punt returner. like Coleman was a legitimately good punt returner, because I think there was more twitch to his game than what we had from McMillan. So that's why I'm not stoked about McMillan being a top 5 or 10 pick right now, but I do think he will go first round. He's got experience lining up out wide in the slot. He's got a really good height advantage, good arm length as well. There are some examples of him just outright muscling through press coverage and essentially just going right through the defender because he's such a bigger guy. He's still lean. He's 210 pounds at 6'5". You know, you carry that pretty vertically. There's not a ton of bulk to his build, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I do think you get him up to 215. Maybe it would even be a little bit of more of an advantage for him. He's also got a nice diamond release, though, to win inside leverage. He's really good at setting up that inside leverage, often either at the line of scrimmage with his release or mid-route as well at the top of the stem. Good fluid hips as well, and athleticism with limited rigidity. You know, a lot of times you see these 6'4", 6'5 guys are just very stiff. I don't think McMillan sinks his hips very well in the route, but I don't think he's stiff either, if that makes sense. He doesn't really sink, but he doesn't appear to have the stiffness that limits his ability to cut the cuts he wants to make. Long strides as well. That stride length for him is phenomenal because it does help him build to top speed pretty quickly. He can overtake some off-man defenders. And I think it's especially effective after the catch for him because he has better after-the-catch speed than I think he's given credit for. And a lot of it has to do with the fact he's just covering ground so quickly with his strides. Even if it looks like he's not running very fast at all, it's just because he's running with such so few strides. He's just covering so much ground because of how long his legs are. But he mixes tempo and his routes to low off-man defenders. He stems his routes short at the intermediate level with some sharp inside breaks, sending them out outside first. So a good, really good outside-in kind of move on those short to intermediate routes to create openings, a good rocker step as well. Nice whip route, too. For a player his size, you don't expect him to run whip routes effectively, but I saw him do it a couple times on tape and create good separation both times he did it. And again, you have the opportunity with his size to be a potential red zone fade monster. There was a rep against Travis Hunter where Hunter didn't locate the ball, but even if he did, I don't think it would matter because Tent McMillan just puts his one arm up and makes a one-handed catch in the back corner of the end zone. Just looks so effortless for him. I think that he's going to be really dominant in those red zone areas, especially. I don't think Arizona utilized him at that high level in their offense that way this past year, but I think in the NFL, they're going to make a more of concerted effort to get him those one-on-one opportunities on the outside in those red zone areas. What I like the most from his tape, though, is his natural feel for zone coverage. He is so good at finding openings in zone coverage and knowing exactly where he has to be. I think that was probably his best, I'll say, mental trait in terms of like analyzing the game in lifetime is finding those holes in zone coverage. He's just a zone beater who's dominant in the area of the game. And he makes a really good effort. When the initial play breaks down and gets extended, he makes a really good effort to work back to the quarterback and find openings. He's a natural hands catcher, rarely drops the ball, good ball tracking, good body control, excellent catch radius, all those descriptors you want for him. He does a really good job high pointing the ball, but he also will get low, dig the ball out on low throws as well. So just really good at the catch point. And I already mentioned that he has those long strides to make him an effective player after the catch to generate more yardage. The negatives for him, though, I think the release package, well, yeah, a couple of go-tos right now. It's pretty underdeveloped at this point in time. There are more physical and aggressive press cover corners who will get stuck to him early on, and he has troubles creating separation against them. I think he needs to use his arms more often in his release to clear that press coverage right now. And he's up to releasing inside, but when he releases outside, he allows himself to get driven into the sideline a little bit more often than he should right now. So he needs to be a little bit more aggressive and physical on those outside releases. Not a consistent vertical separator. I think that play speed is just average for the most part, and it can be outclassed by DBs at times. McMillan does have some monotone routes, but he's just not changing his tempo very much. He's kind of just running the route, and it's not creating much opportunity for separation. I do think separation will be a bit of an issue for him against sticky corners, so he'll have to fall back on those contested catch plays. And he's a good contested catch receiver, but I don't know that he'll have as many freaky highlights as Keon Coleman, because Keon Coleman, I think, had a better vertical and had a little bit better, I'll call it athletic ability at the catch point than some of McMillan does. And he's not as dominant as Drake London. Drake London, to me, you put Coleman, Drake London, and Tech McMillan in a bucket, Drake London was my favorite receiver of those three. And I don't think he's got that quite as much just consistent level dominance at the catch point as someone like Drake London did in college at USC. So there are some concerns there right now for McMillan. A lot of it has to do with separation. And right now, I think there are a lot of rounded routes as well. So not too many sharp routes, but there still are some good routes in his tree right now. It just needs to be refined a little bit more than what you're looking at for a lot of the other receivers. Like, I think Burden has to work on his routes as well. Burden does make some stuff a little bit curled too, but I think Burden has a little bit more of that natural sync and athletic ability to do that than McMillan does at this point in time. And McMillan will get stuck on some mid-route contact as well. In terms of blocking too, like, just no effort as a blocker whatsoever. This guy is awful blocking. You know, you cannot run screens to his side of the field and ask him to block. He just doesn't try. So that was a huge thing that jumped out to me. He just puts no effort into that whatsoever.
Do you think he ends up similar to Coleman as this? You know, because let's say Coleman after week one is what McMillan is now, where it's like he's a top 10 to 15 pick. Do you think he's a guy who falls into that 25 to 40 range rather than, you know, a blue chip player?
Oh, yeah. I think the potential is definitely there for him to fall. Like I said, Coleman to me was a more natural athlete than McMillan is right now. So I think there's definitely a shot McMillan drops off quite a bit. I still put him in that first round conversation because I think he deserves it based on what he's done against some really good corners. But I do think there's a lot of hit and miss to his game right now, where you will have routes where he is able to dominate at the catch point, but there's also plays where I don't think he's as overwhelming at the catch point as some of the better contested catch receivers he's seen come out in recent years. Like, he's not Drake London at the catch point. He's a tier below that. And part of that comes to, I don't think he has the best vertical, and I don't think he maximizes his full body length at the catch point.
Is there anyone close? I know we have some receivers. We got to work through Evan Stewart's a name that comes to mind. There's a bunch of others, but would you say that he's far and away? Is there anyone even close to him for wide receiver three for you right now?
Mecca Egbuka.
Oh, right. Egbuka. I forgot he existed because we did him last summer, but yes.
Yeah, I know. He'd be up there. I think McMillan probably has a higher ceiling than Egbuka, if that makes sense, but they're totally different players. Egbuka is just such a natural separator from the slot. It's just a question of, can he get that like high volume of receiving yardage? You know, he might just be a 1,100 to 800 a yard per year kind of receiver. That's the question marks with him. Versus McMillan, I don't think McMillan does not separate nearly as much as Egbuka. He's got a much lower floor, but his ceiling is so much higher because he can handle a much larger volume as a pass catcher. So it's just a bit of a, which do you prefer? And I think right now I would rather take the risk on Egbuka if I had to pick between the two, because then that, again, I'm a play it safe kind of guy. I want to go for the high floor players. It's not going to get me fired. So I think that, those four though, you know, Luther Burden, Travis Hunter, Tet McMillan, Mecca Egbuka, those guys are all kind of by themselves right now for me.
You had Travis Hunter 5 on your big board, Burden 6, and McMillan 7 for July. We're into August now. Those three guys in a vacuum. Is Burden moving ahead of Hunter? Is McMillan going to be moving down the board? How do you view those three changing?
Yeah, there will be some shifts, and DM Walker will move as well. So there's going to be some shifts up there, but I think Hunter will definitely still be... Wide receiver one's not quite the right way to put it, because it's factoring in they can play two spots, but he will still be the highest ranked of those three. Luther Burden will still be a top 6, top 7 player. He'll still be wide receiver 2. McMillan will probably drop a bit. He'll probably fall down to like the early teens, I would say. He'll be in that range with Josh Connerly, where I'm like, this guy, I gave him a first round, like late first, early second round kind of evaluation, because I think he could be a first rounder, but I'm not sold he will be. So I think that McMillan will be more in that kind of range, where he'll be a bit of a flimsy late first, early second round player for me. But again, man, I only got maybe 10 or 11 guys in this draft who I feel like I would bet on being first round picks going forward. So it's a very limited group right now.
Do you ever do a mock draft before the start of the season? I can't remember. Did you do one last year?
I usually do, but you know, I've got so little time this summer that I just have been doing big boards because they're easy to turn out than mocks. I have finished making the selections for my all conference teams for the Power Four and the All American team I'm going to put out. So I've just finished making those picks yesterday, but now I have to write it all. So it's still, I probably won't be doing a mock draft before the season. If I do, it'll just be bare bones. Like, here's the picks. I'll use like Super Bowl, reverse Super Bowl odds, and I will just throw like names to put names, teams, but I'm not going to give too much analysis if I do something like that.
You know what, quickly before we get to Dion Walker, we should do like dueling mocks, kind of how we did at the end, and then like kind of like with, you know, the point value and everything.
That'd be fun. That'd be good. That'd be really good. Yeah, we have to do that before the season starts. We have to do that. That'd be really good.
All right. So yeah, so we will definitely do that. But next up, you kind of hinted to him, he's moving. He's number three, Dion Walker, on your big board for July. So either he's going up to 2 or 1, or he's moving down a couple spots. So your report on Dion Walker.
Yeah, I think Dion Walker's going to drop a little bit. Not significant drop. Like, Ted McMillan's going to fall a bit for me. You're not going to get that kind of drop for Dion Walker, but it's going to be a bit of a decrease for him. So I gave him a mid to late first round grade. So still a solid first round player, a true first round valuation, but not quite as blue chippy as I was hoping for him to be. To me, he's probably best suit in the NFL as a shade nose tackle who will rotate to 3-tech in a 3-4 scheme. He's a 3-tech in a nose tackle's body. He plays like a 3-tech, but he is has the build and the weight for a nose tackle. So it's very interesting. Both him and Kenneth Grant, man. These guys are not, they're built to be nose tackles, but they don't do the nose tackle-y things as well as I think they should. So it's kind of weird where you have this superb athlete, but he hasn't really built the technique to match his body yet. That's my main concern with him. But Walker is a massive and powerful defensive lineman with the pass rush moves and counters to push or penetrate the pocket. But his high pad level, inconsistent anchor, and poor hand placement make him less effective against the run than his measurements suggest he should be. NFL teams might ask him to actually drop some weight or shift some weight around on his frame, essentially, to become a more consistent and well-rounded player. I think specifically you could maybe add some more lower body weight and maybe take some of the belly off a little bit and move it down towards the calves and thighs a bit for him. Because I do think he gets stronger in his lower body to hold up better at the point of attack. But he's got really good arm length that will surpass thresholds, good alignment versatility because he plays legitimately every position along the defensive line, everywhere from nose tackle to even like two-point stance, 5-tech. They play him everywhere, and he's pretty good at everywhere, to be honest with you. He can do most things for your defense. Quick off the line for a defender with his size. Thick and massive body frame. Lower body, not quite as good, but upper body is really substantial, I'd say. Really good powerful extensions. Some flashes of knockback in his hands, and he will attack the offensive lineman's hands as well to create separation. Twitchy and violent hand usage. Just the best way to put it. It's fantastic. Good bull rush. He will spin back into the action. It's not like a true spin move per se, but he's spinning back not to beat the lineman off the line of scrimmage, but to kind of spin back into the pocket, I would say, or to spin back towards the ball. So it's not your typical spin move, but it is an effective way to him to get to the ball carrier. Masterful swim move. It's his favorite move in his arsenal. He uses the swim move constantly. He's very good at it because he will combine it with a club move, so you get like a club swim, and that's a really powerful club hitting you upside the head, basically, or on the shoulder. So that's good for him. He also uses like a pull swim as well, where I'll kind of give you a tug for and then swim over you. So that's those two really good combinations for him as well. He will also use the rip move. He'll sometimes even tie that rip move into a spin. Where he'll try to rip, and if the rip doesn't work on you, he'll use a spin counter. And he'll also get, like I said, a club move as well. And those counters he has with that swim, the spin, the rip, the club, being able to counter the way he does at his size for defensive tackle. Him and Graham have a rare ability where we have two interior defensive linemen who legitimately have pretty filled out rush plans here. And at the very least, they have good counters. And you don't see that a lot. I mean, we talked about the edge rushers in this class. Almost no one in this class has a good solid counter, really, to go off of. Or at least there are a few, but nothing really substantial. Walker and Grant and me have the best pass rush plans right now as some defensive linemen in this class, which is funny because usually we have edge rushers to dominate that role, but these guys have really good ideas of how to get to the quarterback. And with Walker, He's got a really powerful grip to pull and tear offensive linemen off balance. And he will, I say, get skinny to fly through gaps. That's not really true. He will be explosive to fly through gaps because, you know, can't really get skinny at his size. But he does shoot gaps more often than you would expect for a player with his sheer size right now. There are multiple tackles for losses on tape where he counters through the B gap as a 5-tech. Which, again, the ability to even exchange gaps and get through that range as a 5-tech at his size would be is phenomenal. Really good strong arms as well to help with block shedding and help to close gaps. So I think the ability, the sheer strength he has pops on tape. It's fantastic. The raw power allows him just to blow through some blocks as well. And he has the play strength to redirect to the ball while still being blocked. So an offensive line can still be attached to him, but he can still redirect and close gaps and get to the ball carrier. Really good speed flowing down the line to the ball as well. And there's some nice flashes of closing bursts in short areas at his size. And he gives a lot of effort in pursuit. He tries. He puts the effort in. It's good motor. And he will get his hands up and into passing lanes frequently when he knows he's not going to get to the quarterback. The negatives for him, that lower body I mentioned, not totally filled out right now. Doesn't have a ton of bend to him because of how, just how he's built, really. He's built tall and he's built thick. Conditioning. Late in games, I think he does get a little worn down at times. Again, he's running this massive frame. He does get worn down a little bit. I do think some body recomposition will be necessary. The pad level for him is very high. And because he's playing so high and pops up right at the snap, he loses leverage almost consistently, almost immediately. Doesn't have the best of balance because of how high he's playing and his base isn't always as wide as it needs to be. You watch the Georgia tape, and the Georgia tape is just not very good. Tate Ratledge took his lunch a couple of times in the Georgia game. And this is why I'm higher on Tate Ratledge than some people. Like, I have Tate Ratledge in that borderline top 100 pick range. I know some people were more like, he's a round five guy. Listen, Ratledge has some really good reps against some really talented players. But Walker, if you wiped out the Georgia game, I think you might have like a blue chip player. But the Georgia game does give me pause because those are such good, such well-developed linemen. And they gave him a lot of issues. Pad level was a big concern. The hand placement can be wide at times. It doesn't really cover for the poor pad level. It's also high. So it'll actually be like hitting guys almost in the face mask sometimes, or they'll be sliding off the shoulder pads. They'll be going too high. He does not extend and maximize his arm length consistently, and he will allow alignment into his frame way too often. It's just not as technically sound as you want him to be with his hands in terms of trying to establish himself on blocks and on rushes. And not a consistent two-gapping defender right now. He's primarily a one-gapping player who wants to play moving forward. He does not anchor at a high level right now at the point of attack, and he can be dug out and displaced. We saw it in the Georgia game, and he will be displaced horizontally on combo blocks. And his timing on his block shedding is not really synced up right now. So there's concerns about him, primarily in the run game, which is, for a player his size, obviously concerning. but I think you're just... You might be getting a dominant defensive tackle, but I would not necessarily be drafting him saying, we're going to play this guy at zero tech and he's going to two gap and he's going to play 30 reps a game and just give us elite level run defense. I don't think you're getting that right now. I think you're getting a primarily pass rush based versatile lineman who plays a little bit everywhere for you.
Do you think he'll, so he won't be a blue chip guy, but do you think he, let's say Travis Hunter, do you think he'll end up higher on your board than him? Is it like only?
I think I'm going to move Hunter up because I think that Walker has some more noticeable flaws than Hunter right now. So I think that those two are going to kind of flip spots a little bit. Like you're going to see Hunter move up and be more of this either third or fourth best player in this draft class. Or you're going to see Walker drop back and be more in the 5 to 6 range.
No, all good problems for them to have in probably top 10 picks. And yeah, we'll see with Walker. Is it going to be on teams where like teams are like, this guy's size is so unbelievable. There's so much upside. If we can get him to be a better run defender, we're going to take him over Mason Graham, who, right? Like yeah. He probably put the two of them next to each other. And it's like, this guy's what the first rounder's supposed to look like. Or is it going to be, hey, Mason Graham's tape's better now. Byron Murphy's probably gonna have a good rookie year. We just see Byron Murphy doing this, so he's the best player. Or is it gonna be like Deion Walker, right? This is what, you know, the best player in the NFL is supposed to look like.
Yeah, and it's so funny because Walker at his size, there's not many true first round players in the past couple of years you can compare to Walker to size. It's really just Jordan Davis, to be honest with you. But Jordan Davis, again, a better athlete than Walker. but had limited production in college for the most part in terms of like what when we were looking at true production from defensive tackles in college. He had a lot in there because he was a really good player, but he didn't have a ton of production in college. You got Deion Walker's got this ton of production in college, but maybe a little bit more flawed of an athlete. So it's just really interesting to see how this will shake out. Cause you look at the, like those guys, Devondre Sweat, like these massive 340-pound defensive linemen, where do they go in past drafts? We're starting to see a little bit of a tug and pull in terms of philosophy in the draft. Some teams are willing to take them. Some teams aren't. I'll be very curious to see how Walker fits into this whole thing.
No, it will be. Last player, Trey Moore, UTSA transfer to Texas, the outside linebacker pass rusher.
Yeah, I'll keep it kind of short with him because we're going to talk a little bit about him with his edge ranking anyways. I give him a mid-fourth to early fifth-round grade, so lower than I was hoping for. I had already watched a couple of games of his going into this evaluation, and I liked him a lot more in those games I had watched coming into watching the full thing. Just not nearly as impactful of a player as I was hoping for. We mentioned a lot of Derek, a lot of us with Derek Moore. It's the player who's a bit undersized, doesn't have the play strength to play through offensive linemen, and then doesn't have the bend to really finish around the corner. That's kind of the short selling point for him on the negative side. Undersized, outside pass rusher, can't play through offensive tackles, gets overpowered at the point of attack, doesn't have elite bend to finish around the corner. Those are the negatives for him. And you watch him against Patrick Paul in Houston this past year. Patrick Paul overpowered him a couple times, and Paul was not the most powerful player to begin with, really. You know, so I think Paul beat him consistently in that game, Texas versus Houston, and he gets thrown up around the pocket just way too often. It doesn't have elite change of direction. When you watch him try to change direction when he's crashing down and suddenly it's an off-tackle run, the ball is going outside, you see that stiffness pop up when he tries to stop himself and change direction. So there's some stiffness to his game. Positives for him, though. Lots of special teams experience. Arm length, I think, is passable, but not elite. He does explode off the line. He's got really good burst, really quick and controlled footwork, and there's enough twitch. There's twitch in his game, not moving horizontally, really, but moving when you're talking about like he's going straight forward vertically and he's going to try to exchange gaps quickly. You see twitch in that sense. So there's twitch to maintain his momentum going forward, but when he has to shift momentum, he doesn't have that with him. Good hesitation move. Inside out fakes as well to soften the edge. Two-handed swipe, a really nice spin move, excellent spin move. But that's really, I mean, that's mostly it. He's got a swim and a rip as well. Some flashes of speed and power, but not against high level, like power five, I guess power four now. The teams doesn't have that as much. He will attack the B gap with an inside rip or a club swim. But overall, the pass rush plan's underdeveloped. It doesn't have as many counters as you want. He's more of just a good linear athlete playing outside pass rush right now than he is a complete player.
Yeah, I was not a fan of his, but you kind of know how I am in terms of my pass rushers and just players in general. Like, I'm a big, not necessarily like height, weight, speed, length kind of deal, but I definitely prefer it. And he does not have height, weight, length. And I came away, right, you watch Patrick Paul's tape, and it's like, yeah, I'm sure he's beating some other guys at UTSA, who UTSA plays, but I was like, this is the guy he's got to beat, and he's not doing it. Awesome college player. Like, I think he's going to be great for Texas. I understand why even Ohio State wanted him as an extra rusher. You can do a lot with him, but I came away thinking this is a clear day three pick on film for me, at least, right? But like, you were higher on Josiah Stewart than I am, right? There's just certain things. Like, I'd prefer a guy Vanover at Penn State would be a guy that I would prefer, right? You got the length, you got the size, you got the flashes against good competition just because you have some of the unteachables there, especially as an edge rusher. But yeah, I think he's a guy who's going to get some hype, especially early on in the season, because he'll have like 3 sacks against Colorado State and maybe even Michigan with their offensive line. Maybe guy, you know, comes back down to earth by the end of the process, and you know, we'll see where he ends up.
Yeah, UTSA has had quite a few like legit players, for not necessarily for the NFL, but for college, come through that program in the past 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Think about all the guys they've had.
No. They definitely have, and so it stinks, right? Transfer portal stuff. He went to Texas, but I'm sure they paid him very well to go and to go there. So yes, that was Trey Moore. Edge rusher rankings, edge rusher preview. I'm looking at your list right now, and it looks ugly. I'm telling you, like, this is ooh kind of list for the summer. Let's start, let's go in descending order, kind of like how we did with some of the other positions. I think tight end we went top down, but let's go opposite here. Take me through your tiers, how you bucketed these guys, because there's a plethora of edge rushers that you've watched.
So wait, you want me to start at the top or the bottom? Where do you want me to go first?
Bottom up? Yes.
Okay. So
which is ascending order, but descending from rank. It's confusing, but yes, you know.
All right. So I get these guys broken down in 7 buckets right now, these edge rushers we have. Today, people don't know, I use a tier scale. I also give out individual grades, but I primarily rely on a tier scale to paint a broader picture than we get into individual grades more often, closer we get to the final process. But the scale essentially is broken down by basically half rounds for the most part. You start out with this tier 1, which is blue chip players. It's by itself. Tier 2 is first round players. Tier 3, late first to early second round. Tier 4, second round. Tier 5, late second, early third. Tier 6, third round, and so on and so forth. Essentially going, you know, full round, one solid round grade, and then you're kind of in a half round grade where you're split between the two. That's basically how it works. Just think about the even numbers are constantly going to be just a solid round grade, and the odd numbers are going to be a split where you're kind of broken down between two different tiers. Today, beginning at the very bottom, like Jack requested, the guys who I have at the bottom, I got a group of 4 right now. And it's Sean Martin from West Virginia, Anto Saka from Northwestern, Cyrus Webster, who transferred to Washington State from Utah Tech. I believe that's correct. And then Zebra Carlton at Cal. So Carlton is at top of this group, and I read it from Sean Martin to the bottom, Anto Saka second to last, Cyrus Webster third to last, Zebra Carlton at the top of this group. Carlton might even be in the next tier, in the next grouping of prospects when we get there. Because Carlton, I think, did have a better year this past year than he did when we evaluated him last summer. Last summer, I just gave him a straight 7th round grade. I thought he was better this past year than the games I watched of him play. But to me, he's still kind of vying for this late day 3 spot. Who maybe he gets into this mid day 3, 5th round kind of range, perhaps. But I don't think he's going to be a 4th round player. So he's going to be more of a late day 3 guy for me. The one with the... We don't know much about Cyrus Webster or Anto Saka, frankly. Anto Saka is this speedy, explosive guy who destroyed Julian Pearl on a rep against Illinois and also beat Graham Barton this past year. But for whatever reason, Northwestern doesn't play him a ton. He plays fewer than 250 snaps a year. So we're kind of in a wait-and-see mode to see if he actually gets a decent amount of volume this year. Cyrus Webster, again, coming from a small school where he was a dominant player, not ideal measurable-wise. Short arms, not very thickly built, but very technical in his hand usage. So I think that he has a chance to be a good performer this year. But again, these guys are primarily late day 3 picks. Do you have any questions about this group before?
I'm going to give you my thoughts a little bit. So I have not watched Cyrus Webster. He's the one guy in this group that I did not watch called Utah Tech. I was about to say Caltech, which is not a school that I think has football. But I really like this group. So I'm much higher than you on Saka. We've talked about that. I think he kind of reminds me of Byron Young, who the Tennessee Volunteer product, who had some success with the Rams last year. I think he's going to be a big guy who you manufacture pressures for, stunts. He's incredibly fast. Right. There's a lot that needs to happen. He's more of a fun evaluation. He played 180 snaps last year, had 5.5 sacks or something like that, and consistent pressures, but a lot of work to do. Probably more of a 26 draft guy, but with only so many snaps, it was a kind of a fun one to do an eval on. Carlton was the guy we evaled last year, going into last year, and I was just like, man, he's 6'6", 270 with freaky long arms. This is going to be an NFL prospect. I don't know why people aren't talking about him. And then, and Tyree Wilson had just gone drafted 7th overall. I was like, he's not Tyree Wilson, but he kind of looks like him a little bit. A little bit, stiff as a board, but he was way better last year. So I'm curious in his final year in college how he looks. I think he's considerably helped his draft stock to where I think he's probably in the fourth, fifth round range right now. I don't know if he gets higher than that, but I think he's a pretty safe floor guy. And Sean Martin, yeah, I think we're both pretty disappointed in his film, but another measurable guy. So I wonder if he takes a jump that Carlton did last year. He's more of a look at the height, weight, length, and maybe linear like speed, but everything else needs a lot of work. He's an intriguing guy. I think his floor from an eval perspective, like, you may always be lower on him grade-wise than where he gets drafted because teams have so many players off their board for character or medical reasons that we won't, that I think he could get a bump to where I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up as a fourth round or a fifth round pick just because height, weight, speed, like.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll settle for being right in the long term and wrong in the short term. I'll be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, just so you know, breaking news from ESPN. The NCAA might be throwing sanctions against Michigan because it found out Connor Stallions was on the sideline wearing a disguise during the Central Michigan at Michigan State game last fall.
Yeah.
So not a Michigan game, but Central Michigan versus Michigan State. They saw Connor Stallions, who was employed by Michigan at the time, was on the sidelines somehow wearing a disguise.
Yeah. The Michigan saga is a unique situation, but yeah, no, that is funny when you think about it. We're going to talk about a Michigan edge rusher here in a second. But yeah, that four group of four, again, I haven't watched Webster. I like Carlton and Saka, a couple of tiers above Martin, but I can understand how I think Saka goes back to school. I think Carlton and Martin, one ends up in the fourth round and one ends up as an early fifth. That would be my guess.
Makes sense. And again, I like Carlton this past year. Maybe I'm too low. Maybe I can spend a little bit more time with his 2023 film. But that wraps up the lowest tier on the list. Moving up to another grouping that has a lot more names. Maybe some surprising names, I would say. I'm just going to start from the top of this group. So the top player in this group for me is Jasheen Davis from Wake Forest. I expect myself to be higher on this player than the NFL and a lot of other evaluators. I think I'm going to be higher on him. But to me, him and Ashton Gelati from Louisville, who's next on the list, have a lot in common. I think this is a player people expect to be much higher. People think he's going to be a top 100 pick. Some people think he's going to be a second round pick. To me, neither of these guys have a lot of bend. Jasheen Davis, an explosive player with a high motor, who you watched like in the Florida State game this past year. I was here this past year 2 years ago. It was just a really good showing. I think he's got some really nice pass rush moves and good hand usage. Just not like an ideal measurables and bend kind of player. He's going to win primarily with some inside counters as well. Not fantastic against the run, but just a high motor player you're going to want to have on your roster. I think Gelati wins a lot the same way. His production was a little bit inflated this past year. But I think those two guys just don't have the bend to me to be really elite rushers. I think they're more fourth round range is why I got them graded right now. But I think both of them have third round upside potentially. But I view these guys being more top of day three kind of players right now. So those two are at the top of this tier. Then you got Tyler Onyedim from Iowa State.
Good enough.
Good enough. Close enough right now. I gave him a fourth round grade. This is, to me, is I think the Sean Martin kind of player you're talking about, where it's, the height, weight, size kind of thing, where he's got the build, but the production and traits might not be there. I gave him a fourth round grade in the summer based primarily on the size, but I think he's got maybe one of the lower floors of players in this tier right now, just because of the fact that he doesn't have the dynamic athletic traits that I think some of these other guys do. He's not even as explosive as Gelati or Davis. So he's up here primarily because of the size he offers to the table and because he hasn't been maximized in Iowa State's current defensive scheme. After that, we got Vanover from Penn State, who, I like a lot. You went back and we watched some of the 2022 stuff when he was healthy, and we thought it was much better than 2023. He might be a big-time riser here in this process, but Vanover, for me, is more of a late fourth, early fifth-round grade based on the fact that he hasn't been healthy in a year and a half or so. Now, he is kind of third in that rotation right now. So you got Dennis Sutton ahead of him. You got Abdul Carter ahead of him right now. So how many true reps is he going to get? He's probably going to be more of a Shrine Bowl guy, if I had to guess, than a Senior Bowl guy, but hopefully, man, I'm pulling for him to do well because I like him quite a bit. He's up here kind of in the middle of this tier. Again, more of a late fourth to early fifth round guy. to me, he has the highest ceiling, though, of the guys in this grouping. I think he could legitimately be late second, early third round player if he gets back to where he was in 2022 and shows some technical improvement. So the highest ceiling of any guy in this grouping for me is Vanover. Then we get to Trey Moore, Derek Moore, right here, back-to-back. Very little separate two, in my opinion, right now. They are both these late fourth, early fifth round kind of players, so I think have the floor of just being these mid-day three picks. At best, I think that third round for Trey Moore, potentially. More of 3-4 at best for Derek Moore, in my opinion. I think Trey Moore has some more pass rush moves to his game right now than Derek Moore does, and that, to me, is the separating factor between the two. I think Trey Moore is also a more explosive athlete than Derek Moore. And then the last guy in this grouping, I have Ethan Downs, who I was pretty low on last year. I think he's more, I think I gave him like a fifth round grade last year. And I'm still more in that fifth round range for him going into this season, but I do think he's going to have a little bit more upside because he is a high motor player. I'm curious to see how he'll perform in the SEC against some higher level competition and see if he can fill out his games. I did not love him last year. But I think there's some more mobility for him than maybe I give him credit for. So he's at the bottom of this tier, but I think he's a guy a lot of people will like more than I do as well.
So, yeah, this group. Yeah, I think Ashton from Louisville, I'm not going to try the last name. He's overrated. Jasheen Davis is what he is. Can he get to the third? I don't know. I don't think so. I think, yeah, right. You have tier 8, low is tier 9, high is tier 7. Yeah, that's exactly where I would put him. The Iowa State kid is interesting because I think teams are going to be higher on him. He's got the size like Sean Martin does, but he's a little bit younger. The NFL wants guys like this to succeed. We'll see. I came away with a fourth round grade on him. I think the highest probably is a third. They don't use their guys the right way. Maybe teams have him in the second. Trey Moore, day three, got to me. He, Ashton, and Jasheen Davis are kind of in that same grouping of, yeah, let someone else take them. Vanover from Penn State, right? You said, I think he's got the most upside of this tier. Penn State rusher with incredible length and pretty good size. He could be like a sleeper riser. The only reason, the reason I found him was we watched a lot of Chop Robinson and Adisa Isaac. And I noticed, I think he was number 16 or something like that. I was like, he looks like he's got freaky length. And he had a couple of reps. We're like, oh, wow, that's impressive. That's the only reason why we watched him. But he was a guy that I thought could be a big riser. I'd have Derek Moore over Trey Moore. And then Ethan Downs, his Texas tape kind of skewed me a little bit. Like, wow, like that was impressive. And then the rest was, so he'll play Texas again next year. But, that offense with the amount of times they had their tight ends blocking defensive ends, and we know Jatavion Sanders, that wasn't his strong suit, made some rushers look good in certain games that maybe he shouldn't have. But, that group, you asked me to pick a guy tomorrow, like, this is my draft board. I'm taking Vanover at Penn State. I like the upside of Tyler from Iowa State. And then the rest of the guys are less my cup of tea. And that if you're going to have flaws, have awesome size and length and a little bit less from that group.
Gives you something to work with, right? I mean, usually makes you at least a good run defender.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, speaking about size and length, on to this next grouping. This is a group of five players. I've got Landon Jackson at the top right now for Arkansas. Danny Dennis Sutton next up. Then it's Patrick Payton, then Ja Joyner, then Josiah Stewart, who I imagine I'm just going to be higher on throughout the course of the process than a lot of other people. Landon Jackson, I gave a really low round grade to last year. I did think that going back and watching some of his tape following the end of the season, obviously Alabama was a good game, but he did have some other there were reps and there were not other games I would point to and say that was a fantastic game for him. I think it was more there are a couple reps per game where he's a really good player, and so I think you have to build on that. Doesn't have the bulk in his frame right now to be a consistent run defender, and to me he might be a faller at some point in this process, but I think given because this is a third round, by the way, this is the third round for me, these are third round kind of guys, third round of me is fine for him. You think about the size, the length, the flashes he's shown. I do think that he has the lowest floor by far of any player in this tier right now. But I think that also he has a pretty good ceiling because of what he offers to you physically, and there's still room for him to develop. So he leads off the top here. And in second place, to me, he's just a power rusher, doesn't have really good bend. And Lane Jackson doesn't have elite bend either, but he's got good bend for his size. Danny Dennison, to me, just doesn't have phenomenal bend. He's also a player, though, who does have some of those splash moments, too, where, like, you see what the idea is, but he doesn't really have that. He hasn't really put that all together. To me, he's more of a power rusher who's a solid run defender. Patrick Payton, athletic guy, just so lean right now. Not a guy who's able to really hold the point of attack and the run. Has some bend, but not great bend. I'd say maybe a little bit more than Danny Dennis Sutton, but it's not the point where I think it's really impactful in the way you want it to be on a consistent basis, and his pass rush plan is just not where it needs to be right now. I know some people are projecting him as a first rounder, like they think he's going to make this massive jump. I just don't see it right now from him. So he's a bit lower than some people probably have him. Ja Joyner, you and I liked him pretty much. You and I liked him last year. There are some flashes with him. Again, not a totally complete player. I think the running defense needs to improve a little bit, but there's also some quality bend there. It's not consistent necessarily, but there's some nice bend there at times. Pastor's plan is improving. And again, he's got a lot of those flashy wow reps too. So I think that he's a good player in this class. Maybe a bit of a tweener in terms of like what you get from Danny to Sutton with the size. He's thicker than Patrick Payton, but he's got more bend than Danny Dennis Sutton. So a little bit of a mix between some of the guys we've talked about so far. And closing it off, Josiah Stewart, he's just incredibly undersized. He's just probably the smallest guy we're talking about on this list. Maybe hammer-sized Robster. The difference being that Josiah Stewart has some legit pop to his game. When he makes contact, it looks like the lineman feels it a lot of times. And you watch him compared to Derek Moore, and there's just so many more flashy plays from Josiah Stewart than there are Derek Moore. And Josiah Stewart's actually an impactful run defender a lot of times, and you don't get that from a lot of these smaller, undersized guys. So will the NFL like him? Probably not, because he's so small. But the tape is so much better to me than any of the other players we talked about on this list at this point. I think he has to be in this tier as opposed to being a tier down.
Everyone else on the list, do you mean everyone in the two previous tiers?
Two previous tiers, yes. Yeah, so the only one who comes close to me, I think, is Vanover back in 2022 occasionally, and maybe some Jasheen Davis as well, but no one else to me comes close to Josiah Stewart from lower on the list.
Yeah, you know, right, as I've talked about a ton, right, got rushers like under 6'2". Again, there are guys where it does work, right? Like, we've seen it more and more. Teams are getting these guys on the field in more unique ways and as DPRs, and it has worked. I just was a little lower than you on Josiah Stewart. Same tier on Ja Joyner. I'm interested with Patrick Payton. He could not maybe Mason Smith type, but kind of where he goes in the third round. But maybe like, his tape kind of has never shown that, but he's got really good size and length, and that's about it. And the team's like, we'll work with it. We'll see if he can take a jump this year. I was kind of underwhelmed with his tape from last year. Landon Jackson, I think the NFL is going to be higher on than everyone else. It just seems to be like that's going to be the case with a guy like him. And then Dennis Sutton's got to show a little bit more next year. I think he will. I just, you know, how does everyone split snaps on Penn State is my question. But I think we saw with Adisa Isaac, Chop Robinson, and Dennis Sutton, they can make it work. So with Vanover, Sutton, and Abdul Carter, I think so as well. But, you know, they got a really solid defense and defensive line. So I think he could be a guy who ends up being a riser. But, yeah, I think kind of people put him in the first round conversation, which is really premature at this point. But he does have awesome traits and was a five-star recruit, which gets you drafted in the top three rounds.
And then next tier up, I've got JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State. And I've got players not going to play edge this year. So I don't know if I want to keep him in this spot going forward. Maybe they'll shift him over to the linebacker spot. But Jalen Walker from Georgia, who, again, undersized player. We already had this conversation before, so I don't want to have too much of it. But undersized player, but just a really explosive and a bendy player as well. So he's got more of that natural athleticism to him than Josiah Stewart. Just think about a souped up version of Josiah Stewart to some extent. That's kind of what you got from Jalen Walker, but he's going to be playing off ball this year, supposedly. So I don't know what we're going to do with that. Just know that I like him a lot to the point where he's in this late second, early third round grade range, which is where I have these two players. And then with JTT, he's just not a bendy player. Doesn't have a complete pass rush plan. He shows out against Penn State every year, but doesn't really match that performance ever the rest of the season. So it's two best games of his career, both Penn State games. And he doesn't come close to that, in my opinion, most of the rest of the time. So I think that he's just a high floor player who's going to be a really good run defender for you. He's probably going to give you 4 to 6 sacks a year. And he'll be a quality run defender, but I don't think he offers the upside you're looking for in like a top 50 player, which is why for me, he's down here in this late second, early third round kind of range, because he's a good run defender. He can be a quality starter for you, just not a complete player. And Simms Walker, not a complete player, hasn't played a ton of reps to his game. Not someone who's going to be a super great run defender when players are trying to climb versus him, but just a super explosive and bendy rusher who might get some upside at linebacker. We'll see how it plays out this year.
Yeah, I think with Walker, even if he plays linebacker, some teams may view him as an edge. We've seen him do it. I think in terms of the edge, you're going to talk about Pierce, Carter, and Michael Williams, and Nick Scorton. I think he's right up there in terms of upside, where a lot of the other guys don't have that level of upside. And then JTT would kind of be more in that Patrick Payton, Jaw Joyner tier for me. So yeah, but we talked about that last week. JTT versus Jalen Walker. But yes, you tiered them together. Your next group.
Yeah, next group, 4 players. Then we have 2 individual tiers right after that. But the next grouping, which is this is the second round range, actually. It's Jack Sawyer at the top from Ohio State. Michael Williams from Georgia is next. Then it's Nick Scorton from Texas A&M. And then Princely Umiamielen from Ole Miss, the Florida transfer. To me, these players are all pretty interchangeable. They're all very close together. So I don't think that, it's not set in stone by any chance. These guys can all kind of shift within their own tiers a little bit, especially this grouping. With Jack Sawyer, you kind of get a mix of what you get with Michael Williams and Nick Scorton. Scorton, to me, is really all power. A couple of really good pass rush moves, but doesn't have a lot of bend to his game and doesn't have the deepest pass rush plan. Michael Williams is very inexperienced player, but super bendy and super athletic. Doesn't quite match the measurables in terms of like the weight per se. He looks very lean to me on tape, just a very raw player, but a good athlete. Sawyer is kind of not the high level athlete, doesn't have as much power score and doesn't have as much athleticism as Michael Williams, but more power than Michael and more athleticism than Scorton, I think. Really taking a lot of steps forward this past year and a half. You can see the developmental curve for him. It's pointing up, and he had a lot of development this past year as a run defender, maximizing his power, playing a better anchor, and developing a pass rush plan, which is why I have him a little bit higher. I think he continues to trend in the right direction. He's improving at a faster rate than Michael Williams or Nick Scorton, which is why I have him above those two guys right now. But not a complete player by any means. He doesn't have great bend to his game. Doesn't have the best anchor. You see, sometimes he is overpowered at the point of attack. Doesn't have great arm length. So certainly there's some drop-offs here and there with Jack Sawyer and with this whole group as a whole. Again, Michael Williams as a very raw player. Scorton is more of a power-based player with not a ton of bend and natural flexibility to his game. Princely Umiamielen might actually be the guy who ends up jumping all these dudes in the end, because if you go back and watch the Georgia tape last year, you saw the power and the ability to be an impact run defender. He's got good bend and good overall athleticism to his game. He's got some solid arm length. He's got some developed pass rush moves. He's working on filling out that pass rush plan. To me, him and Michael, from an athletic standpoint, are probably the closest two together in this grouping. And then I think he's just got maybe the potential to be a more well-rounded player than anyone in this group right now going into the draft. Not necessarily saying he has the most upside of the class. Michael might still get drafted on the upside thing, but Princely might end up being, from this tier, the most complete player of the group at the end of the season.
I have no idea why he went back to school. he should have just been in last year's draft and probably was a second round pick, if not an early third. Maybe he gets into the first round. There's a shot, right? Like, you put him, like, he's got tier 3 upside. He definitely does, but just find it odd that he went back to school. Yeah, Scorton and Michael Williams, I think just because they're younger, end up higher for me than Sawyer. But I understand having him right now higher than them. I think you're going to be a little bit lower than the consensus on scoring in general, but I like that. And then, yeah, I think of this group, Mykel Williams has the most upside. Just play like you do against Florida State in every, like his freshman film, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be the best player in the draft. And he didn't really show that for the majority of his sophomore year tape. Like, it's kind of like a snooze fest. And then he decided in the Florida State game against a bunch of backups that I'm going to be the best player in college football. And it was on the best tape I've ever seen, but the rest was eh. So I understand that. And Sawyer made a big jump. So there's that. So your last two guys in two tiers of their own.
Yeah, these guys are in their individual tiers. I got Abdul Carter in tier, like this own individual tier, because again, he's a linebacker transitioning to play edge. And I've got James Pierce Jr. alone in his own tier atop the rankings. Carter, has a debate or has the chance to be the best overall pound-for-pound athlete in this class. Just a superb athlete, but limited pass rush plan, only playing outside linebacker for the first time in his career. Still pretty lean in terms of his build, even going back and watching their spring game. He's just trying to win with athleticism right now, you know, and hopefully that development comes later on. But when has Penn State actually really developed the technical elements of an edge rusher? All the guys they send to the NFL are these raw athletes. So I don't really have a lot of hopes for him coming into the NFL with a true pass rush plan and a lot of counters. I just don't think it's going to happen. So he has to be this late first, early second round player based on the athletic traits. And I just can't boot him up into tier the top grouping with the guys, because I just don't think he's going to be a complete player when he enters the NFL. If he was a linebacker, I might feel a little bit better about him being in that top tier, but we'll see. We'll see how it plays out this year. There's a lot of room for him to develop, but I do think as a edge rusher, just focusing solely on the edge part of things, you know, he has a pretty low floor compared to his ceiling. He might be, in terms of, again, production, play stuff, that like technique, all that kind of stuff, he might end up being like edge seven in that kind of category if you're taking all those counts. The athleticism will always boost him up a certain amount, but in terms of the actual development as an edge rusher, he might not be even close to number two in this class. And then James Pierce is just, oh, hey, go ahead. No, go ahead. Take it away.
No, just quickly, Abdul Carter. Yeah, exactly what you said. Like, I don't know what he is. I just think he'll end up in the first round somewhere in there. Is it third or is it 26? And we're having the conversation. You go back to sophomore film as a linebacker, he's clearly a first round pick, but you go to his junior film as a pass rusher, and it's like, that's not the position for him. So there's a lot there.
Yeah, you might just be drafting an athlete in the first round, the back to the first round here. But James Pierce Jr., explosive player, not a ton of power, like not elite level power, not elite level bend, but just well-rounded overall. So not a player I would put in the blue chip tier by any means. Or I do have him kind of in that range for this class. He is in that grouping, but for the broad spectrum of, if we were talking about like Bosa brothers, and we're talking about Chase Young, and we're talking about like those guys, we're doing like a spectrum of 10 years. He probably doesn't fall into the blue chip category for pass rushers across that span. But for this class individually, I think he's very close to Graham, like him, Graham, Travis Hunter, maybe Will Johnson, are all kind of grouped together in this tier where I can consider them blue chip for this class, but not a player who historically I think stands apart from some of those guys. I did like Jerry Verse a little bit more, but I was like a very high Jerry Verse guy for a couple years in a row. So I don't know. That might be a bit of personal bias on my part. But Peter Smith just has a really well-rounded collection of traits, a very explosive player. He pairs it all together well with a good pass rush plan. And to me, he is by far the top edge rusher in this class right now.
I can't remember when we talked about it. You'd have Latu ahead of him too, or?
Yeah, I think I would have Latu ahead of him as well. I know that the athletic traits of Latu are not as good as they are with Pierce, but I love pass rush plans, man. I love guys who have complete pass rush plans, and Latu had that in spades.
Yeah, no, he was the guy when you talk about pass rush plan. It's like, that's him. So yeah, right? You talk about blue chip prospects for this class. Yes, blue chip prospects in general. We just named two edge rushers who went 15th and 19th overall last year who you would, you know, consider taking over him. Granted, maybe they will, you know, we'll see how things play out. Maybe they should have gone higher or lower. We don't know. But yeah, that was the edge rusher group. This is just one guy. And then the second best guy, it's like, is he even an edge rusher? You know, it's like, and then you got Jalen Walker. He's not playing edge rusher, and he's in your top 7-8 guys. So it's a interesting class, and that's not saying it nicely, but I think it could end up being better if guys take a year three jump. Like, there's 5 stars in there ready to do it. So we will see. So that was the edge rusher class. You know, reports on some top guys: Travis Hunter, McMillan, Walker, Trey Moore as well, and then the NFC South 2020 draft classes. So thank you for listening to the Draft Report. Catch us every Wednesday talking all things NFL draft related.